I don't know what just happened there. Happy Friday, everybody, and welcome back to Bioactive Live Q&A. I am back here again with you guys after a couple week break, and my green screen's not working, but we'll work through the technical issues here. We are live, and that's one of the growing pains of having a live show is just these little minuscule hiccups and stuff. We'll get that squared away, but super stoked to be back with you guys again. Hope everybody had a great holiday, had an amazing new year. Been talking with the boys this week. I've been dealing with, the new year mental health issues and stuff like that. So it's really been a blessing to have Kevin and Brian to lean on. Specifically, just like today is kind of when it's starting up. So I just want everybody to know that mental health is not something that needs to be a unspoken about. We need to talk about that stuff. And this is a tough time of year, guys. So just know you're not alone out there if you are struggling. And make sure you keep an eye out for your fellow growers, your fellow friends in this community, because we all need we can all use someone to talk to. So don't forget that, guys. And off of that tangent, let's get back to the matter at hand. Today, we've got Jordan River from GrowCast Podcast, along, as always, with Brian from Rubber Ducky Isopods and Kevin from OK Calyx. It's a pleasure to have all four of you on, especially you, Jordan. You're a newcomer to the show. Welcome, brother.
Hey, thank you, guys. Thank you for having me. Good to see you, OK Calyx. Nice to meet you, Mark and Brian. Super excited to be here.
Yeah, we're stoked to have you, and it's cool because, like, the way we started was, like, the first few episodes of the show, we kind of started with the slow roll, you know, slowing ourselves down because we have this tendency, again, kind of getting out of control with the level that we're talking at, and especially when we have these heavy-hitting guests that we really want to get to the nuts and bolts of what they have to offer, we skim over that one-on-one level stuff. So it's going to be a really good opportunity to kind of stop, circle back with Jordan, and get some good information on beginner 101 soil growing. And then we'll move into the advanced stuff. Before we get into that, though, Jordan, why don't you tell us a little bit about GrowCast Podcast and about your operation over there?
Thank you, man. I appreciate that. And I could not agree more. That goes into a lot with what we do at GrowCast. I started the show as a podcast back in 2015 after I did 5 years in Humboldt County being a professional medical grower. And me and my buddy Wolfman would turn on the microphones and when we would hang out to smoke, we would just always end up talking growing. Like, man, we just talk about growing every time. We try to talk about sports. We try to talk about anything else, but it always goes back to growing. Why don't we just turn on the microphones? That's how GrowCast started. And our goal was to educate cannabis growers at the time. And it still is. That show grew over 6 to 8 years until we created the community, the GrowCast community, where now I help growers one-on-one all the time. I have the extreme honor and pleasure of helping our growers in our community every single day, diagnosing deficiencies, doing the grand pheno hunt, keeping things exciting, giving out tons of prizes, and things like that. But back to what you were saying, sometimes you get lost in the sauce. And what I mean by that is there's no understating how important advanced education is. The work that you guys do, talking about microbiology in the soil, talking about the microbiome of the human and how that links to our farming practices, that's some of the most important stuff maybe in the world that you can talk about in advance. It's very, very important to have advanced education around this stuff and break these barriers. But sometimes you get lost in the sauce and you forget about the people who haven't even entered our world yet. You know, I did a post recently on Instagram and I think it was very poignant and timely and true, which is we do a terrible job of bringing new people in the community. We do a terrible job. We're a very insular community. And when somebody starts getting interested in growing, for instance, like home growing, there's no good place to start. When you try to explain it to them, you sound like a crazy person. You're like, oh man, I'm so excited you're going to get growing. You're going to love this. Go buy a tent. You're going to need nutrients. Get some good soil. Watch out for these spider mites. They're going to try to eat your stuff. But you're going to love this. It's going to be so much fun. It's like very overwhelming, and we need a better way to bring in fresh blood to our community. Otherwise, if you're not growing, you're dying. So really this year, I've got a twofold approach to GrowCast and the cannabis community, which is continue to educate people who are doing it and teaching people how to grow better, helping them diagnose and correct deficiencies, identify pests and things like that, doing contests, cups, having fun like we've done with GrowCast, but also really focusing, not catering to growers, but catering to smokers. There are so many cannabis consumers, daily cannabis consumers. Can we just get 1% to start growing their own? If we get 1% of the total smoking population, we're creating tens of thousands of growers. And that helps us achieve our mission of overgrow. Because if everybody who wanted to grow did grow, we would all have enough. That's the concept of overgrow. And that's what I'm focused on for 2025.
I love that. I love that because it is emphasis on community. And, you know, you're in Illinois. I'm in Michigan. We were talking before the show, and the legal worlds in the two states are a bit different. Here in Michigan, the floor is completely fallen out of the legal market. And on top of that, I feel like the educated consumer has lost faith in that system and that product. Just because of scandals, testing mishaps, not trusting what they're testing for, et cetera, et cetera. And what we found here in Michigan, what I found, I don't want to say we because I can't speak for everybody, but what I'm finding is that the best quality meds, the meds that are grown with the most intention, with that you don't even have to test them. We talk about like organic certification. I trust the OK Calyx organic certification more than I trust an Omri, CDNA, whatever certification. So we're finding in the community that we can trust each other more than the people that are testing this stuff and saying, hey, you popped hot for aspergillus. You need to run it and irradiate and run it through a microwave to kill all that and then send it out to these consumers who need it for medicine. So I love the idea, and you called it overgrow. I'm sorry, I know what you mean.
The concept is overgrow. And here's how it works, right? If you grow at home and you have a reasonable size setup like I do, the first thing that happens is you have a surplus and enough for all of you and your family's consumption, right? It should be nearly free with the system of overgrow. So the first thing you do is you have surplus for you and your family. And then what happens? There's 5-10 people in my life who I supply. Patients, more extended family members, not just the people in my household. All the caretaker programs apply to this theory. It's not that everybody needs to grow. It's if everybody who wanted to grow, everybody who showed interest, and you know you get hooked once you start, if everybody who wanted to grow did grow and started growing, we would all have enough. That is the concept. And the cannabis plant is so inherently valuable. It grows out of the dirt for nearly free. It yields a huge amount of medicine, textiles, food, all of this stuff, and anyone can grow it. I can teach you how to grow it easily, like in no time flat. It's easy to grow. So this plant that's super easy to produce has a bunch of value, and what happens? People try to get in between you and the plant to get a little piece of that value. This includes the cultivators, right? Which, of course, there's got to be professional cultivators. Not everybody's going to want to grow. There's always going to be room for licensed cultivators. I'm not saying they need to disappear, but they're in between you and the plant, obviously. Everyone who packages it, everyone who regulates it, every single little regulation, transporting, banking, all of these people stand in a big long line in between you and the plant, which has a natural value, and they all just want a effing piece of the pie. That's it. Boom. That is literally it. So if you can cut those people out, and either grow it yourself or go straight to the person who carefully grows it for you, now suddenly its value is what it truly should be. That's a free market, by the way. Get all these people out of the way in between me and this thing that grows out of the dirt for nearly free. That's my whole thing. And again, the concept of overgrow is that if everybody who wanted to grow did grow, we'd all have enough food and medicine.
Totally agree. And I don't think that I love cannabis because it inspires, it gets people who maybe wouldn't grow otherwise to start thinking about growing. And what I hope that it does for those people, once they start to realize like, okay, my cannabis, my medicine, my product here is so much better. What if I start applying that to like my food too? Like, cause food's really important. It's more important than cannabis. Obviously we need it to actually live. So you know, I having that overgrow when it comes to food too. Can you imagine?
Well, listen, I got news for you, Mark. Cannabis is a gateway drug. This is something that I've observed, and I can say this with certainty, that once you start growing cannabis, it is 100% a gateway drug. There is a 75 to 80% chance that you're now going to start growing peppers. You're now going to start growing oregano, and you're going to start growing catnip for your cat. It is a 100% gateway drug to more growing. Humans belong around plants. If you look at how long plants have been on this planet, and then the tiny little fraction that like primates and then like, you know, like the great apes and then us as actual humans, like plants have been here way longer than us. And our whole evolution has been around plants. And now you got to sit in a bedroom all day and then get in your car and drive to a cubicle and drive back and never be around plants. Are you kidding me? Screw that. That's not healthy. I don't need a doctor to tell me that's not healthy. Get more plants in your life. And if the way to get them into it is they love this plant, which, by the way, is like a little terpene nature bomb. No wonder people in America and our rat race lifestyle love to consume this stuff. They're not getting pinene from going out in the effing woods. This is their way. Man, it just makes me, I don't know, it just makes me feel way better. It's a little nature bomb in there, and you're missing out on nature. And that's why Americans and people in the rat race love to consume this stuff. And yeah, humans should be around plants. That's a big principle of overgrow, is there should be more plants around us.
So love that concept of overgrow. And so how do we, you mentioned it, we need to do a better job at extending our hand out to people who want to get into this. How do you guys do that?
Oh, thank you for bringing that up. And I do want to say for the people watching this show, I know it's probably a lot of advanced people, and I do have some really cool meat of the show, but I also want to challenge you, advanced people. I want to challenge you, but also thank you. So to answer your question, there are very few good places to start. When you Google how to grow weed, you find some of these websites that offer a free grow guide that are very good guides, but they tend to be very general, and they tend to explain too much and overwhelm people. So I've found that when you want a new grower and you walk to them and you say, hey, you're going to need nutrients of some kind, and then you try to explain nutrients, that's a very bad way to do it. You should say, hey, our grow is soil style, but we should say, hey, buy this soil. Here's a map. If you can find this soil in your area, get this soil. Tell them exactly what to do, right? And so it's very hard to do that on a digital scale. The reason I want to thank the people tuning in is, largely how we've gotten as big as we've gotten in the cannabis community is by you folks mentoring these people. Usually how someone gets started is they smoke their buddy's homegrown weed and it's like, wow, this is great. And then their buddy says, listen, if you want to get started, you can copy my style. Text me if you have any problems. I'll walk you through a run or two. I mean, literally, that's how we've done it. So thank you to everybody who has helped someone else get started growing. That's literally how we've gotten here. But we got to be better than that. Here's why we have to be better than that. There are boof peddling, anti-home grow lobbying, MSO corporations out there that are sinking tens of million dollars into marketing and messaging and sales. Who's doing that for home grow? Who's countering that for home grow? Who's out there saying why you should grow? It almost doesn't exist. So can we counteract against that tens of millions with GrowCast? No, absolutely not. But we're going to do our part. We're going to each do our little part. And for GrowCast, we just created what I think is the most simple beginner's guide ever created. It's a soil indoor home grow, and it uses sub-irrigated planters, earth boxes sort of thing. And I believe after 2 years of putting this thing together, I believe that's the simplest way to get started. And now anyone watching this can send someone to growcast.com. If you know someone who's a smoker, you don't have to sound crazy to give them the whole pitch. You literally just say, go to growcast.com. The guide is free. It comes with free access to membership for when they run into a problem. Hopefully they stick around and love us. If not, God bless. Our mission isn't to get a million members. Our mission is to create a million growers. That is our mission. So did I answer your question? I'm getting hyped up.
Yeah. So I wanted to kind of like, if we can, you definitely answered the question, but I wanted to even like apply it practically, right? So like someone comes to you and says like, what's the easiest way to get growing in soil? Like where do you start? Because mm-hmm. I think we've talked about that before. And like, start. That's the problem, right? Like the starting. Yeah. Here's how I answer that question, and here's why I am lending myself to the problem that you said, is that I would say, well, if you really want to get into living soil, you really need a volume of soil. You know what I mean? You really need a big volume of soil. So a 3x3, 4x4 bed. It's not a, that's not a dipping of the toe in, right? And so if it's just dipping the toe in, then I'm going down like a 15 gale, but I really wouldn't tell somebody to go smaller than that, right? And that's just from my perspective. On your side, how do you get people engaged in growing from like a rudimentary?
It's a tough conversation to start. Literally, what do you start with? Like you said, starting with soil is actually not a bad place to start, because people know that plants grow in dirt. Like one of the things that gets beginners' eyes to glaze over is when you start to talk about nutrients and pH. They're out. They're all the way out. That's a non-starter for a lot of people. Here's the problem with convincing people to grow. It's a three-step process. You got to give them seeds. We do a great job of that in this community. Lots of people handing out free seeds. The problem is you think you've done enough and now you've kind of, you haven't. Step two is you have to convince them to grow, right? And then step three is maybe the most important part. And this is what you're saying. You got to provide them with a style where they're going to have success the first time. Otherwise, they're going to give up. So I think that plants, I love growers of all kinds. Let me be clear. And at GrowCast, we educate growers of all kinds. But I think that soil growers are the easiest to start with. A, because soil just makes sense to people. Plants grow in dirt. And B, because when things go wrong in a soil grow, if you just correct the soil, think all of your nutrient levels are going to magically balance out. Whereas when things go wrong in a bottled grow, now you sometimes you're going to have to tune up your formula to try to adjust certain nutrients that may be deficient up. And it's going to be a much harder time recovering, I think. And again, I support all growing styles, and I think you can grow any which way. But after years, I mean, we put together a whole beginner's course and scrapped it, you guys. I worked on it for months, and I watched it in the end, and it wasn't right. And after years of thinking about this, what we really think is, like you said, a large volume of soil, specifically in a sub-irrigated planter. Those earth boxes aren't super large, but when you have a sub-irrigated planter where the water reservoir sits beneath the soil and wicks up into the system, you eliminate over and under watering. That is the biggest killer. Watering is a, this is what I've learned. Let me say this to your audience.
I totally agree with you. I'm shaking my head violently here, but I completely agree.
This is something that's dawned on me. Watering is a lifelong practice. You don't just get watering. Like, it is a talent that gardeners have various levels of. And if you do it for 50 years, you'll learn something new on the 51st year if you're paying attention. Watering is like infinitely complex and skillful. And guess what? We don't want to do that for a first timer. Put it in a sub-irrigated planter. It's easy mode. My tent looks amazing. I've got four earth boxes in there. It's easy mode. And it's given me time to work on this other stuff and to think, how can we get this to beginners and have them fall in love with growing so that we can put more plants on this planet? I really think the soil style in a sub-irrigated planter, again, the GrowCast guide at growcast.com, which I encourage everyone to send to anyone who wants to get started growing, gives you a very simple step-by-step. Doesn't explain soil volume, just says, get this, get a 2x4 tent. There's actually three different packages, but like in this case, get a 2x4 tent, one earth box to go in it, get a couple fans, get this soil in your area. If you can't get it here, order it online if you have to, right? I really like what we did with it. And just keep spreading the word. That's the only way we can keep doing it, is keep spreading the word. And by the way, if you don't grow in soil, I would rather see somebody work with you one-on-one, like I said, with a bottled grow, than to just try to Google their way through a soil grow. So again, shout out, huge props, and thank you. The whole freaking community should be thanking you if you are somebody who's turned on one, two, or three people onto growing or more. That's incredible.
Awesome. And that's really important, because it's like really hard to explain the way that we grow to a beginner. So having that as an earth box, and like you said, over and under watering is the biggest thing, and it's so like speculative, and there's no way to really nail it down. Like, you can't really tell somebody from afar, like, hey, you're over/underwatered. It can be expensive equipment to like actually really dial that in and figure out what's going on. So yeah, having a SIP or an SIP is a great option. Earthbox has always been highly touted. And are you reusing that soil mass, or do you have to get rid of that every time and re-amend?
It depends. You know, it depends on the size of your SIP. So in membership, we have a really good resource for our members on how to build your own SIP system. And you can do that really easily at Home Depot with those big totes. And you can have a larger SIP system with a larger reservoir than an earth box, build it yourself. And now you're filling that thing even less. And to answer your question, when you get a SIP that big, it kind of acts like a no-till bed. You know what I mean? Like you can amend totally. It and you can run it and you can let the roots decay stomach. In it. Yeah, 100%. Now, if you're working with the city picker, which is the smaller 2x2 version, what you're going to find is your plant's going to grow great because you have a good soil in there with a good Bokashi from OK Calyx, which is what I used this last run. And the system completely takes care of itself. The problem is the roots get so bound up in that city picker that you almost can't use it again.
Yeah.
Now, the good news that I tell people is, listen, if you're a home grower and you have an earth box and you run it 2 times or 3 times, let's say, and then you're finding that it's really earthbound, there's nothing wrong with taking that little bit of soil and incorporating it into your outdoor garden and buying a new bag of soil. That does not make you carbon footprint polluter, enemy of Captain Planet. It just doesn't. Like, you got a really good run out of that soil. There's nothing wrong with replacing soil in your small home grow setup. When you start producing at scale, those questions, those sustainability questions become more impactful, right? But I hate to see people like, oh, I can't replace my soil. It's like, listen, go put it out into your garden. You're doing great. Just by growing your own at home and not having it be packaged and regulated and shipped all over the place, you're already being more sustainable. You know what I mean? So that's my thought on the situation anyways. And when I do a city picker and an earth box and it gets quite earthbound, a root bound like that, I'll take that soil out. I'll incorporate it into my outdoor garden and I'll refill with new soil, some fresh bacteria, some aggressive microbes, decomposers like a Bokashi or like some heavy trichoderma, and just put those in there and let her rip with some fresh soil.
Awesome. Kevin, do you have something that seemed like you wanted to jump in there?
Yeah, I was just thinking, take that soil and put it in your garden, like Jordan said, and it will bioremediate after time. You can add things to it, and you can double your soil. You can use it, you know, a third of it with your new soil and just expand it. You know, you can reuse it even though you're not using it again in your tent per se, the exact soil. Reamend it, add things to it, add some IMO3s. That's when you can practice some of your natural farming things and see if you can get you a good soil going after one big year.
That's a good point.
So, Jordan, we talked kind of about, you know, that beginner, really how to get somebody even into the conversation. Like, and it just to have a list of a few things, like, all right, let's start with that, right? Such a great plan. It's something that I'll definitely be stealing for people trying to get them on board as well, because I usually get into the long-winded conversation of how I do it and having the big volume and why you shouldn't have the small volume and this, that, and the other thing. And like that's the goal maybe way down the road when it makes sense and you have your own house or you have your...
Sometimes you scare them away.
100%. And
I always scare, but I always scare people away when I start talking grow.
And it's it, dude. And it's just because I'm passionate and it's just because like, I want to help, but it's like,
same.
Yeah. It's like the girlfriend that gets scared away. Cause you're just like overpowering on them. You know,
have you seen that meme where that guy's at the ball game and he's got his hand on his chick's neck and he's explaining something very aggressively and she's just got 1,000-yard stare. That's most people when we try to like explain growing in 5 seconds. I'm trying to fix that, but
yeah. So let's kind of shift now. Cause I want to touch base with the rest of these advanced growers and guys, everybody that's tuned in. The whole point of this show is it is a live Q&A. So we really, do appreciate and enjoy the questions that you guys have because it brings a whole new element to the show. It allows us to talk about stuff that we might not even consider. So it's really important that we get that feedback from you guys so we steer the show the right way so that Jordan can answer the questions that you guys want and we don't just sit here and obloviate talking about all the stuff that we want to talk about. So with that, and don't forget to hit the like and subscribe button, everybody. With that, Jordan, let's shift into some kind of some hacks, right? You said that you've got like kind of just like a laundry list of like grow hacks, ways to simplify things. Let's jump into some of those, and hopefully we can spark some questions rolling in so we can shift into that for that second half here.
You got it, man. You got it. Because I'm thinking, what do I bring to the MI Beneficials, Bioactive Live podcast? I'm not going to talk to you guys. I'm not going to blow your mind about raising isopods or some new like bacterial phenomenon. I would love to, but I'm not a scientist, unfortunately. But I do work with growers every single day, like really, really in depth with growers. A lot of times working with growers more talented than me. And it helps to work with these people because you start to understand what their needs are and where you can improve things. And so what I ended up with was a whole bunch of hacks. I thought, you know, what I really like from a show when I tune into a grow show is when I take one or two really memorable things that I end up using in my garden for the rest of my life. So like little tips, tricks, hacks, processes, maybe products that you may not have thought of. And when you start using them, it's one of those things where you're like, okay, well, I'm never going to do it any other way. Some things on this list you're probably already doing or have already heard of, but I guarantee you there's going to be one or two that you haven't thought of. So I can start just going through them if you'd like, and you guys can interrupt me, stop me if you would like to comment or something like that.
Let's like hit your top two because we got people's minds, we got people thinking, so we got questions rolling in.
You're right, the questions are rolling in. Okay, let me rapid fire a few. How about that?
Yeah, let's do that for sure.
Okay, so the first thing is about soil and moving soil. A lot of times it's super challenging to move large volumes of soil. If you're going to plant in a container or a bed, like you said, go big. You got to go big. It's always better bigger until you want to move it. And one of the big problems with moving a large rain science pot or a bed is you got to bend down and pull this big thing of soil. And if we could do a little physics lesson here for a second, when you bend down, you're losing all of your strength. And when you grab the thing and you're pulling it as an even surface, you're creating a lot of friction between the ground and it becomes very difficult to move. What you need to do is go grab a rope or a strap, loop that around the handle of the pot, and now stand upright and drag it. For one, you're going to be upright, so it's like instantly you feel that you're able to engage your muscles better and you're not going to throw out your back. And for two, lifting upward on the handle reduces the friction between the pot and the ground. It lifts it up a little bit, right? You're going to drag way heavier stuff through the magic of physics. Never drag your pots. Tie a rope to them and drag the rope instead. There's my first hack. Second soil hack. When you're transplanting, don't just dig a hole with your claw, with your dirty claw like I do, and throw your pot in there. Fill up your container halfway with soil, then take the plant that you're going to transplant still in its container and put it in the space where it's going to go. Now fill the rest of the pot as if it's transplanted and now remove the container itself. You have a perfect container sized hole. Turn that son of a gun upside down, pull it out and put it in the hole. No wasted soil, no dirt everywhere trying to pile it up. A little transplant. And then the third soil
thing today, Jordan, just that way.
The third soil tip that I have is some of you guys have really active soil. And so you use maybe you use like a paperish plant tag to label your plants and label the strains, or maybe you use like a popsicle. And I'll write my strain name on a popsicle and I'll put it in the dirt. But the problem is halfway through my run, my soil's so active that I pull it out and the bottom half has been decayed. It's gone. You know what I mean? So it's one of the few times I really like plastic. Plastic spoons, like a cutlery from Walmart, make great plant tags. Boom. Three rapid fire. I mean, I have a whole list. There's a whole bunch more, but three rapid fire tips for you. What do you think?
Love
very,
it.
Very nice. I would say there's cedar plant tags too.
They won't decompose. That makes sense because they're antimicrobial or what have you.
Yeah, sorry. I think Kevin and I were talking over each other. I think my internet's slower today or something, boys. That's why the background and all that. So, anyway, man, those tips are, I think, next level, to be honest, with the simplicity of it. I think in the early days, too, man, we would go with the really cheap fabric pots. Then we'd be trying to move them from veg to flower. Everybody would be trying to move these big-ass pots. You would rip the middle of the fabric pot, and you've been working on this for a year, 2 years, whatever it's been. It's a nightmare. So those are fantastic things, I think, because you never really think about that kind of stuff until it's hindsight. So I just wanted to point that out.
Listen, these are the basic ones. I've got more. We can, wherever you guys want to take it, we can knock out questions.
Let's hit a couple more, Jordan.
All right.
If you're down, we usually run this about an hour and a half, just when it's tantalizing, when it's a good conversation.
Yeah, sure.
If we
listen,
we
I got it short all night.
If we need to. Yeah. So hit us with a couple more. Those were really like not what I was expecting.
Little
at
things
all,
you
but
don't
I love it.
Think about, right? Okay, so let's talk popping seeds. Popping seeds. Everybody loves to pop seeds, pop more seeds. A lot of people do the paper towel method. This is where you take a wet paper towel, you put it in, you put it in the paper towel, you roll it up, put it inside a Ziploc bag, seal it, put it in the space. I really like the paper towel method, especially for beginners, because as opposed to the dirt, direct and dirt method, you can check on your seeds. You don't have to dig them up straight out of the dirt, right? So I recommend people do the paper towel method. One of the big problems with the paper towel method is if you leave your plant unattended for too long, the seed sprouts, it grows through the paper towel, right? Now you're like, damn, this thing is like intertwined in here. Well, I have two tips for you so you never have to worry about this again. The first tip is if you simply take your Ziploc bag full of seeds and elevate it upright, like if you were to nail it to the wall, the seeds will grow perfectly upright within the bag, and when you unfold it, they're going to be right there laying flat, not growing through the surface. Second tip is if they do somehow wind through that paper towel, don't try to unravel it and pull it out. That taproot is super, super fragile. Root pruning is fine. You can chop roots later when the plant is bigger, but that taproot is super, super fragile, and when you try to get it out, you're going to rip it. Instead, just take scissors, cut around the paper towel, and throw the whole paper towel with the seedling into the dirt. Don't drive yourself crazy unwinding it. Cut around it. Also, make sure this goes into a whole thing, but make sure you're not using super cold water with popping seeds. A lot of people make this mistake, and even like cold tap water is not a good way to jumpstart things. You want to make sure that it's warm enough. Buying a water aquarium heater was one of the best things I've ever done. Putting too cold of water in your earth box, putting too cold of water in your living soil, seeds, whatever, it's a big problem. And you can get these submersible heaters to get a bucket up to an appropriate watering temperature. One more quick thing. Let's say you're popping seeds and you only have a little cup of water and you can't heat it with an aquarium heater. Simply take your hand, stick your hand in the cold water and kind of swish it around there for 30 seconds and then do your other hand and your body heat will warm up that cup of water to where it's no longer too cold to pour on the seedlings. Bang.
Awesome. Love it. And that it's like, I can tell you've been doing this for a long time because you have you probably gathered tidbits from here, there, and just years and years of trial and error and doing this stuff the wrong way. I mean, if those tips don't hit home for some of you guys, then you haven't made those mistakes yet.
I've got a lot on climate too. Sorry, go ahead, Calix.
Jordan's position in the community, he's like a hub. All information grows through Jordan. And it's like I used to think about this with you, Brian. The more shows you do like this, you just actually absorb knowledge, and it's not like you ever use it. You just have these things that think like Jordan just said that just boom, they're like, oh, that was good. And so when Jordan's doing all of these podcasts and all the social media, the immersives with me in Octobers, man, he's just constantly hearing great things. And he's like just that hub of information. And he's the sponge. And you can hear
the best class I ever done. It's the best class I ever done, Calix. I just want you to know that. I want to say that on your show.
Appreciate that, man. I love it.
Next level.
Kurt Williams, just to interrupt real quick, Kurt Williams on IG said you could use coffee filters for germinating seeds. Have you used those before?
Interesting. I'm a huge coffee guy. Make sure you're using unbleached coffee filters for your coffee. I used to do a show called the Coffee Health and Science Podcast. We talked a lot about regenerative agriculture. It's still up. If you want to go back and listen to that show, I'll plug my old dead show that people still love. And yeah, that would make sense. Absolutely. I love people using what's around their house. There's a lot of good things in your house that you can use in your garden. We talked about Epsom salts earlier on this show, and there's a lot of big examples of that. Here's another little hack. Speaking of knowledge flowing through GrowCast, Mary Beth Sanchez told me that generally anything with the Latin suffix A-T-E, eight, sulfate, you know, phosphate, these things are uptakeable by plants. So if you look at the back of a lot of like your vitamins at home, half that shit is uptakeable by plants. If you really had, and it were in a crunch and needed to like crunch up some vitamins and minerals and give them to your plants, the ones that have the suffix 8 are going to be uptakeable by the plants, and the ones that don't may not. So I thought that was pretty cool. Can I throw out a couple tips on cold, and then I'll be done?
Absolutely, and then we'll get into some questions here.
So it's cold right now. It's wintertime, and I've really I've seen a massive shift when it comes to helping growers, and I'd love to talk to you and your audience about it right now. Because when I started GrowCast 10 years ago in 2015, everybody was running HPS lights, gas bulbs, super, super hot. They grew great weed, but they were inefficient and they were super, super hot. And everybody was fighting heat problems. I would be helping people on the live questions back before membership existed. And everybody was, my tent's getting too hot. We got to say, increase that ventilation. You're too hot. You're too hot. You're too hot. Since then, everybody has switched to these high powered modern LEDs. And then these modern LEDs have gotten a race to efficiency, where the heat output of these LEDs has gone down and down and down and down and down, to where now I am literally seeing the opposite constantly. I no longer see people that are too hot unless their ventilation is like way off. If you have a modern LED in a tent with an AC Infinity fan, you ain't going to run into heat problems. If you put that same tent in the basement, your plant's going to start drooping from the cold. And you're going, what the hell is going on with my plant? Usually the light is enough. It's like a little sun in there. But these lights have gotten too good to where things are getting too cold for people. So here's a couple of thoughts on cold. Causes your plant to droop, causes your plant to drink slowly, and it causes it to uptake nutrients less effectively. If that sounds like it might be something that's happening to you, that could be the case. Now, never trust your readout. I love the monitoring systems, Pulse, ACI, Arroyo, all these, it's great. But never trust your readout and just say, oh, the temperature is good. Think about the whole picture. Think about the temperature of the root zone. Is that pot sitting on concrete? That concrete's going to steal all your heat. You need to either get it up off the ground or you need to put insulation in between there. Again, are you watering with cold water? Maybe the floor is fine and the air is fine, but then you dump in cold water because it's freezing out in my Midwestern pipes and you're shocking your plant. Oh, I wonder why my yield is lower this time of year. It's cold. You got to avoid that cold. So a couple huge things. First of all, the aquarium heater to heat up your water. It heats it up quickly. It's a really good way to make sure you don't get cold roots. Elevating your pots and getting insulation in there is huge. Here's the big tip though. If you find that you can't get it warm enough in your tent because your plants are young, so your LED is on low and it's producing no heat, and there's no heat anywhere to come from, don't plug in a 1500 watt heater before you try this trick. Take your intake fan, which is generally at the top of your tent, and reverse it with your outtake fan. We've always put the intake fan at the top because heat rises, and with those hot gas bulbs, you want to get that heat out of there. Now you're trying to conserve that heat. What you want is for the light to heat up the top of the tent and then the outtake, which is now on the floor, to drag that warm air across your plants. Brilliant. And warm them up, because there's so many people that are running too cold because lights have got too efficient and fans have gotten too good. So reverse your intake and your outtake fan and follow up. Sometimes I take a small little desk fan and I tie it to the ceiling of my tent. So it's blowing warm air straight down from the light to the plants. Don't let your plants get too cold, especially if you're in a basement like me.
That's like that was basically what my struggles were for the first year and a half of indoor growing, was just exactly what you just described. And I never ever tried switching the intake with the outtake.
Sometimes that's enough. Brilliant. Heaters take a lot of efficiency. A lot of power. They're very inefficient.
If you've ever kicked a heater on in the winter to try to keep your grow tent that's exhausting out immediately, you're if you're with a wife or a roommate who's sharing that bill with you, they are not happy.
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry, chat's making me laugh. So there you go. Try the reverse your intake and outtake before you go spending a bunch of power firing up the 1500 watt heater.
Awesome. Awesome tips. Brian's kind of our question MC, and I think this is probably a good time to jump into some questions here, because that's a lot of great information, Jordan. Can't thank you enough for the rapid fire tips. I'm going to be clipping some of that out for sure.
You got it, man. I'm happy to be here. I'm a little bit sick, so I'm like, I got really stoned. I'm super amped up. You guys are good hosts. I'm having fun.
Yeah, getting super stoned, I think, is part of the requisite for this show.
Cheers.
But again, like as we've said over the years, man, it's hard to fake the funk, whether the show's an hour, 3 hours live. When it's live, questions come in. It's kind of hard. And I know that being able to rattle that stuff off takes years to be able to be that polished. And I would say that even this little crew on Friday night is behind you on even just kind of answering those questions, not even I hope that you take this the right way, because I don't know you. We just met each other. But you're dumbing it down, it seems like, so that more and more people can understand what they're saying. So that's what I like to see, man, because then if somebody wants to have more of an advanced discussion, that's there as well. But it doesn't necessarily have to be, look at me, I'm the smartest dude in the room, look at all this vocabulary that I'm using, and you guys don't know about half of the stuff I'm talking about. And I think that sometimes is... It goes over people's heads when people are focused on that kind of stuff. So just wanted to point that out.
I appreciate that, Brian. I do. And it goes back to what I said. That work is very, very important. It's really important that scientists have discussions using words that I can't understand. But one of the big like philosophical things that I was like really wrestling with was, if you can't take your information and disseminate it to the people and have it impact regular people, what good is your information? Like literally, it's like almost like an acid trip moment, right? Which is like, it's exactly like you said. So both are important, and we're really trying to balance that going into 2025, and honestly, fixing the beginner stuff. So, but yeah, I see a bunch of people in chat. Izzy in the chat. What's up, everybody? Good to see you.
Right on. Hey, we got our first question from Traptor X. Jordan, how can I get some more of that McCracken OG from Rizzo?
Man, Rizzo Rich, breeder of Growcast Seed Co., purveyor of many confections. Just amazing work. We've got a Key Lime Madness pollination coming. So the Key Lime Madness is a Purple Capers Key Lime Pie crossed to 808's GMO BX5 doo-doo butt pheno. So it's really, really exciting. I'm trying to buy time, Traptor. I don't remember the McCracken OG. He's handed me so many good. I wonder where he got that from. That's not one of his. He didn't breed it. He must have. He grows a lot of other people's stuff.
Tell us about the Oreos.
Oreos pollination was fantastic. This Key Lime Madness pollination is going to blow the Oreos pollination out of the water.
That's it.
Rich is a really good breeder. I suggest you go check out the Growcast episodes with him. The reason I like Rich is because he, like you said, you can't fake the funk. Like, he'll tell you how it is. His favorite strain ever is a strain that he didn't breed. It's his Truffle Cake number 2. Like, that's a very honest thing to say as a breeder who's been working for years, who's like, this is still my favorite weed ever. And you're pointing to somebody else's work. I think that's amazing. And I think with the KLM, this KLM pheno that he has, the Key Lime Madness, I literally think it's the first time that he feels that it's the best thing ever. I love this weed. It's black spray paint can meets lime rind meets, he says funk. I felt like it was a little more chemmy than funky and super, super gassy. And by gassy, I mean like fuel, like gasoline. I wish I knew more about the McCracken OG. Shout out Traptor X, though. I love Traptor.
More and more people are wanting to talk about the Electro Box. I think we're working on that, but I was going to throw this over to Kevin and Jordan if you guys wanted to speak on it.
I was referencing the Earth Box. What's an Electro Box? That sounds like an electrified version.
That's why I wanted to throw it over to Kevin if you didn't know.
Is
Kevin,
do you want to...
I don't know anything about this. This is what Rick is going to
talk about. Is it a electroculture?
Rick, what Electrobox is?
Yeah, it's yeah. Rick's and
Rick Easley, one of our guys on here constantly and on Instagram. He's the guy doing all the work. I mean, none of us are. We just talk about it and act like we might know a little bit, but he is actually doing stuff. He sent me a couple of little things. I don't even know what to call them, but yeah, he's deep into it. I have zero idea of that stuff, but we will bring some knowledge on this show with the electroculture soon.
The thing about electroculture is to me, it falls in the category of what could it hurt? Like, you know what I mean? Like, obviously I get like wanted to prove the scientific efficacy and I'd love that, but also like, what could it hurt? Right. So I don't know. Well, I like it.
Especially if you're like a citizen scientist and you're playing around in your own basement in your own home.
Totally.
Yeah, why not find out for yourself and just do it? None of us believe the authorities anymore, so just go do your own thing.
I love this question.
All right. Thank you, guy. Bros, hi. What can you shout out to him because he's here every week. I should say that as well. What can you use to make the wick on a sip?
So a sip system. I'm sorry. Did you want to take that, Alex?
Nope, I don't. Good question. Sorry. Go ahead, Jordan.
A sip system should have a reservoir on the bottom that is just pure water, like you said, but it doesn't use a wick. What it actually does is the four corners of the planter have a little drop down to where the soil sits above the water, but in those four corners, the soil actually drops down to the bottom level, meaning that it's saturated. Does that make sense? Basically, at the bottom of your earth box, if you look, it's a little grate, and there's four little squares cut out of the corner of the grate. And the reason that is because you pack down soil into those four corners. One of the ways that you need to make sure your earth box works well is that you pack down the corners that drop to the water level, and that acts as your wick. And it's shocking, guy grows high. It's shocking how well it works when it wicks. You can use any soil. I recommend you get a good always cannabis specific soil in your area. Every area has one, right? There's like Stonington Blend and Bio 365 out east. Here we have Purple Cow. There's a Detroit Nutrient Company. We got all, whatever your local one is. But I gotta shout out one that I think they're all gonna do amazing. Like literally, you're gonna grow amazing weed with any of them. But I think the best one for an earth box, shout out to Farmer John, one of the greatest growers in our community. He turned me on to the SD Microbes is the name of the brand from San Diego. SD Microbes Biovast Living Soil. It's a cocoa-based living soil. It's a living cocoa using their supercharged vermicompost. And because it's cocoa, it wicks a little bit more rapidly and readily. And it dries out a little bit faster, which I like. Again, it's not like you're going to do great with any soil, but I did want to shout out. I'd never seen anything like it, and I love the results. SD Microbes Biovast Living Soil, cocoa-based.
When you're dealing with like an earth box, it sounds like cocoa, just like a cocoa-based, is going to be the best. Is that correct?
That's what I wasn't sure, but that's what I'm 100% seeing.
As opposed to peat. I mean,
The top layer is a little wetter on the cocoa because I think it's able to wick a little more effectively than the heavy peat blends. I'm using Purple Cow. Love Purple Cow. Indiconja is their weed blend. And I can't say enough good things about Purple Cow. The SD Microbes is outperforming it just a little bit, a hair. And I think it's because it's made out of cocoa.
Well, and here's another thought too is do you have to be concerned so much with getting like a pumice in your blend for like chunky aeration? Because when you like, I think that like pumice is touted as like some of the best aeration because of the fact that it doesn't float up when it's being watered from above, right? So I would wonder if from below, is there movement going on in the soil where the pumice or perlite or whatever you're using is working up?
That's a really good question. I know it's still useful because they have, I mean, I guess that is a good point. Like what if you had people growing straight cocoa? Like what if you grew in straight cocoa? That is a good question. I'm not smart enough to answer that.
I guess the question would be more like, you know, like I always tell people to go with a blend that has pumice, but it's going to be more expensive generally, honestly, like versus perlite, which is your small stuff that was going to float to the top of the pots.
How about this? The SD Microbes has neither of those and they use rice hulls. It's the only aeration in that blend. It's cocoa and rice hulls. How about that?
Right. So it's not even necessary when you're talking about a sip, which is like, man, contradictory to the way that I think about it, but I love it because of its simplicity.
Yeah.
Like let's stop being so contrived about this thing, and it doesn't have to be all in balls to the walls. We can get people tiptoeing into this thing.
Oh, absolutely.
And come along for the journey, and then
it's got to make sense. It's got to work. It's got to work the first time. And once you got them hooked, then it's on. Now I have other problems with aeration, like you know, not saying pumice over perlite. I do completely agree, but it's for other reasons. Perlite's a terrible substance to work with. Like if you have a bag of dry perlite and you don't have a mask on and you don't have eye protection and you fucking sneeze, pardon my language, like that's a major problem. You can blind yourself with perlite. It gets into waterways. It chokes fish. Right? Like it's a great material because it's cheap and it gets people growing, but I don't think it's like super practical. So I do love rice hulls, pumice, lava rock. Is that the same thing? yeah.
Not exactly, but yeah, I know what you mean.
They use lava rock out in Hawaii a lot. So Any of those things are good choices.
Since we're talking about that right now, I saw somebody did ask one of these questions, Brian, about using limestone because it's available in their area. Do you guys have any comment on that? Like, as it using like chunked limestone instead of using pumice or lava rock. I don't know that I have any issue. Yeah, they dude, they get wild. I mean, we spiral on this thing.
Local limestone quarry. We have one by us too, Eric. Wow, that's fascinating. That would be a Mary Beth Sanchez question, my friend.
I don't know that you would have anything crazy coming off of that limestone that would affect the soil. I just don't know that it's going to be as porous and as good of a home for microbiology. But limestone, I think, is pretty porous, so it might actually be amazing.
Oh, she's here. That was crazy. It was like Beetlejuice. We summoned her.
Oh, the pH would be a problem. Okay, thank you for immediately making me choke
on my
words.
Shout out to Mary Beth Sanchez.
Mary Beth Sanchez.
I mean, listen, she needs a shout out. She's amazing. She makes she's her community awesome. What it is. She's taught me almost everything I know, especially about deficiencies. She's taught me everything I know about deficiencies.
The next question.
Magnesium. I'm sorry, Brian. She's the one that brought up the Epsom salt trick, I believe, when I was listening a long time ago.
Yeah, that's a OG move right there. She's been around. She's talking. And we were talking about, I guess we should speak on that too before we came live. There is a simple trick with Epsom salts. If you have the money, buy an atomizer. Use a little bit of the yucca extract, Epsom salt, and I promise you, if you spray it correctly and don't overspray it, you are going to have praying leaves the next day. So that's a little trick that we used to use, like we were saying, when the suits were coming to make us look even a little bit better than we were. So we have another question from the plant butcher. Jordan, do you heat the lung room or just the tent? He has a basement grow.
Hell yeah. I think a lot of people have problems controlling the environment within their tent because they put all of their equipment in their tent. And the thing about your tent is it should be cycling air pretty rapidly. So you have a humidifier in there and then the humidity is coming out and it's just getting sucked right out. So ideally you want to condition the place, the space that the tent sits in, ideally. Now that's tough for me. I'm in a huge basement. I'm in a huge aqua dome right now under the ocean. And the problem with that is my tent is a very small space and a very large cold space. So if I stuck a heater, it wouldn't do anything, right? So it's best to condition the room that the tent sits in. If you have to put it inside the tent, or what I'll say first is if you're having a harder time controlling it, move it closer to the intake. So instead of putting it inside the tent, put it right by the intake. Now it'll disperse better throughout the tent. And then worst case scenario, if you're going to put something in the tent, I would be quickest to put something that heats in the tent, like an oil radiator. Like I said, if you reverse your intake and outtake and it's still not enough, you got to add heat. Definitely get an oil radiator and definitely put it inside the tent. That does a pretty good job radiating that heat. And it's your next best bet instead of firing on the electric heater, like I mentioned before.
It's just so unideal to grow in a basement, especially in the Midwest. Jordan and I live about 2 hours apart from one another. So, yeah, growing in the basement and trying to keep it heated can be very, very costly. So any advice on that is always good. And trying to keep a basement heated is, yeah, forget it. Unless it's completely finished.
Yeah, exactly. That's where I'm at. It gets really, really cold. And the dry and cure can be quite nice, I will say. But, man, flowering right now is tough.
Totally agree.
Yeah, shout out Rick. Heat it with an HPS. I love it.
Yeah, double enders. All right, Cat Piss 32. Could someone give me any tips on how to babysit my 30-gallon living pots outdoors during the off season? I've let them get a little rain, but considering covering them up during the heavy rains.
Nah, you want to put some. You want to get some roots in there. So get some. There's all kinds of stuff. Red clover is always beautiful. It's a great thing, and I love the look of a beautiful crimson red clover. But there's all kinds of cover crops that you can grow. There's actually lots of vegetables you could grow. You know, all the brassicas, all the cabbages. You can grow lettuce. You grow onions. You know, it's actually getting close to time to put potatoes in the ground. Actually, believe it or not, here in my zones. So yeah, you want roots because roots create exudates, which feed microbes, and you have the whole living soil system that you're actually trying to entertain and work, and that happens during your off season. So that's a good thing just to learn how to figure out, how do I get roots in? What plants will grow in cold weather outside?
And if you're somewhere like us in the Midwest, like I mentioned, there are winter rye blends that and hairy vetch. You just got to make sure that you plant it when it's like August, early August, get it down as you want it to start kind of growing a little bit before it starts to get super cold, because if it doesn't establish, it really won't thrive, but it's still alive. It survives snow. It's still in my gardens outside. So yeah, totally, totally possible. I know people are thinking it's cold. How do I keep roots alive? Use the right seeds.
I want to highlight Cat Piss is saying the off season. You know, Dr. Lane Ingham, there's a couple videos you could find on YouTube with a quick search. But she goes into detail about the magic is really happening in the winter and how things are surviving, and like the real aggressive and bigger microbes seem to be developing, and the diversity is there, and things are achieved in the winter. So that's when Kevin's talking about the exudates and stuff like that. I don't think enough people realize, even in my little world with the isopods, all of my soil that is sold has gone through some kind of exudates, just because I know that that's a little extra that you can have against the competition. So when you're growing cannabis as medicine, using exudates, in my opinion, is that little extra for you as well, especially as a basement grower. All right, Eric Jensen, I am trying to mix up living soil for a 3x3. If I have a local limestone query, I guess that was asked twice.
Sorry, I jumped the gun and threw that one in when it made sense there.
All right, my bad. All right. They want to know, this is for both of you guys, Jordan and Kevin. When is the next OK Calyx immersive? It sounded like you said October's plural.
I think we're going to do 2 days. I just want to set Calyx up for this and say repeat again, maybe for those who just tuned in. That was the best class I've ever done, man. Like, we do a lot of different education on a lot of different subjects, but I've never had a teacher who was so damn passionate, because all my classes, if you come to a grow class, you're going to learn about growing, and that's fantastic. But maybe 10 to 15% of this class was philosophy and life improvement, and it just takes a totally different turn. I've never seen such a happy group of students at the end of a class, man. So I want to thank you for that. Last year's immersive was insane, and we're shooting for a Saturday event and then hopefully a day two on Sunday, so that the people from last year can come to a day two. But you tell me, Calyx, what's the plan?
It was so much fun. And we talked about mental health right at the beginning. You can always improve somebody's day by giving them some kind of tool to help their mental outlook become a little more positive. And it was so simple to do because you know, and using analogies with nature, growing and personal growth, and you know, trimming your own life back a little bit to have better growth and improved growth. It's so easy to learn how to live a better life simply by watching Mother Nature 1 year and all four of her seasons and seeing how things just grow. They come and they grow. It's a cycle that's going to happen, and you can jump into that mental health cycle that it will cycle. It will come and it will go, but you start to learn, just because I'm down a little doesn't mean it's going to stay here. I'm going to have growth again, and it's going to happen. And that is our life. Our life is so much like plants. And so I had a great time just getting people to feel like they have hope in their life, and that they can find passion in growing like I did, and they can replace addiction with a new addiction that's much better and way more healthy. And I loved getting the chance to just to tell people what was the most important thing in my life. And then we got to talk about what we all enjoy, you know, which is making inputs, going out into the woods, finding that IMO6. We found some purple stuff on a log. We've never seen this purple bacteria, moss, whatever. And so we called it IMO6 jokingly. And when we got back, I had people text me, "What's IMO6, man? Show me a picture of it." But we were just playing around. Had a great time, man. Yeah, we're going to do it again. No doubt about it. I've been talking to my wife about, you know, possibly doing it here at my own home. We did it on our family land. It's beautiful. We might do it there again. I don't know. I'm excited to do it, though. Jordan, I want to thank you because Jordan's super easy to work with, guys. You can tell how professional he is already just by being on the show. More than that, he's a guy who cares about his family. He cares about doing other people right, and he's really easy to work with. So shout out, Jordan.
Oh, thank you, man. It was easy, and it was fun. And, yeah, stay tuned. We have the date up for day one. You can go grab tickets right now. You'll receive more info on the exact location and things in the future because it's not till October. But some people did want to get in on that. Now, if you came to last year, don't buy your tickets yet because you're going to get emailed a special discount code. If you're going to come again for the second year, that's how you're going to get a big discount for day two. So stay tuned. And one more time, thank you, man. Awesome class. I cannot wait for October.
Excellent. Mark Nelson, I do outdoor on my first indoor run, got organic soil. Can I top it up, reuse? What do I add next run?
I'm not exactly sure I think he's wondering how does he reuse his soil? And that's a pretty broad question. By amending it,
So I do outdoor. On my first indoor run, I got organic soil. Can I top it up, reuse? What do I add next run?
George,
yes,
it.
Yes. Well, I got you to know if you can reuse the soil and what to amend it with.
I think you could either
new to indoor.
Pay for a soil test if you want to know exactly what it needs. I think that's one option. And I think the other option is to kind of just like wing it, re-amend. I like, here's what I like. I like OK Calix Bokashi. I like Brandon Rust, friend of the show, Calcil. I like Build a Soil, friend of the show. I like their Build a Flower, Build a Bloom. I think they're both super good.
And that craft blend's pretty good too.
That craft blend's been around a long time.
But I will say that I carry a veganic craft blend, so it doesn't use any slaughterhouse, and it's made here in Michigan, a Country Roots Organics. Have you ever heard of them, Jordan?
Can I get a little sample of that? That sounds awesome.
Absolutely. And I also have an entire line that they make all natural inputs from their farm. So yeah, I'll get you in touch with all that, Jordan, for sure.
Great. Someone said BioLive. That is very cultured.
I guess the point of bringing up Country Roots and like is just like if you can find it local, if you can support a local company that's using inputs that are local and has the same repertoire, because there's a lot of people that are kind of following the same principles, but we're trying to lessen our footprint here. So if you can stop it from being shipped and just get it locally, or buy it from a grow shop locally, like your craft blend, a lot of grow shops carry that stuff. So make sure that you're supporting your local businesses.
I love it, man. And I would love to try that stuff. I want to say one more thing, which is obviously like if you have your own compost, the best compost is your own compost. The best compost tea is your own compost tea. But if you're buying soil and going indoors and you want a secret weapon, because remember, like it's all about the microbes breaking down the minerals in the soil to deliver your plants, right? Get BioVast vermicompost. It's the same stuff I mentioned powers the SD microbe soil. You can get just their vermicompost. And I don't know if you've seen Andrew's work, but he's taken the time to catalog the different species of nematodes that are in his vermicompost, and it's amazing. Farmer John turned me onto it. He calls it his secret weapon, and it's the number one like little microbial boost that I put in my earth boxes, along with Calyx's Bokashi, because I know it's fresh.
I got a question from Mr. Easley. What's the best ruminant manure to use?
That's like a cow or something eats grass, I believe, or a ruminant. So like rabbits.
Alpaca.
Alpaca. You want some manure where the animal hasn't pooped and peed either from the same spot or in the same spot. You have poop go back here and you have pee go this way. And so you don't have this high nitrogen, urea stuff all in the manure. It's just basically composted grass, right? And grass has what grass needs. Just put it back in the garden. And this is great for off season. I always put rabbit, chicken, whatever manures in 5 gallon buckets or in piles outside. And I let them sit there until all of my gardening is over, because all my prep work is right now. It's about to begin. I'm about to really start dumping in stuff in my no-till spots, i.e. rabbit manure, chicken manure, fermented leaves, my Bokashi IMO3GLF, the fermented plant, and all that stuff that I make. It's about to get hit heavy and hard. And then all I do during the summertime is just give it water. That's it. And so the prep time is now rabbit, alpaca, top two.
I would do it reverse. So I would say alpaca is number one and rabbit is number two. But the rabbit has to be very specific unless you want a huge fucking headache, especially with the peeing and all that. In my opinion, the ones that I've personally used for a long time are called lionhead rabbits. They're usually giving as gifts during Easter, so that's coming up. And then people don't want them, so they give them to the shelter, and then you can go get them for like $25. They're usually like $150, $100. These things are like little dogs. They're so much fun to have. I personally would get a female if you have kids, because I have seen the males bite before. But other than that, the cold manure is next level, and I would highly recommend that you can, if you're in a small area, use those rabbit manures. And if you are on a farm or you have legit land where you could play around with a few alpacas, that's my personal dream, to be honest. They are also like dogs. They can poop in one area, kind of clean up. They all know that that's the spot, and they move around your property. And then you can use a dung beetle to move all of that manure around your farm. So there's a lot of ways that you can use Mother Nature where you don't actually have to spread it around. All right, I got the dope smoke. I use Irish sea moss powder and bladder rack powder. I wanted your guys' input on that. I've seen that on TikTok and stuff, the sea moss powder more as like a MLM marketing thing. But I was wondering if anybody had actually used that in their grows.
No.
It interests me. People use like spirulina, which is like a similar algaic type thing, right? That's cool. And then also
we feed our springtail spirulina.
I'm no geography expert, but is the Irish Sea like it's got to be pretty far north, you know, up there by Ireland? And isn't that kind of where you want to get stuff? Like they always want like the Norwegian cold pressed stuff and everything from that northern sea because it's not all toxic. That's my understanding. So I don't know. I couldn't say that. I don't know enough about it to sign off on it, but it sounds like maybe you're on the right track.
And bladder rack powder sounds badass. So
yeah, exactly.
Keep using that for sure.
I don't know what that is. Anytime you're buying something, cold press always means quality. So just always kind of look for that. All right, Noah Hovland, question. As opposed to growing from clone, where you want to transplant the clone. Wait, let me slow down. As opposed to growing from clone, where you want to transplant the clone, then fully saturate. Mm-hmm. What's the best method after germination to get a seed going?
Do you guys water before or after you stick your plant in the dirt if you're going from one pot to another? This is like a huge splitting point with people.
I saturate that soil to the level that I want prior to putting that plant.
So like Mary Beth says, that's what I transplant dry so it's less messy and then immediately water.
But I will say, though, that no, actually, even when I'm doing 1 gallons, though, because like what I'll do is I'll just get a big tote and I'll mix it up in there.
That's smart.
And get it to the saturation level that I need it, because I'm used to when you fill up a big bed, if you're not saturating that as you're filling it, you are going to be in a serious world of hurt for a long time and you're not going to understand why. It's like it's one of the most critical things of doing like bed growing is like you have to saturate that soil as it goes in. Otherwise, it's going to go hydrophobic, the whole thing. Yeah. It'll just run through. So
my method depends on how far the 5 gallon bucket is away from me. Like it don't matter. It might be dry. Anyway. It's just like
whatever's easiest.
So.
But to answer the question, I do, when I'm doing from seed, I don't want to put it in something dry. I feel like I'm scared it'll dry out the seedling so fast. So yeah, absolutely. No, I like wet. I like ProMix. It's available everywhere. It's super gentle. You can take a seedling, throw it in a cup of ProMix with a shot of compost. I mean, I know it's like a...
It's a sure shot. You just have to buy a ton of it. That's the only problem.
You can find the bags that are about... They're soft bags. They're about that big. They're about $9.99. Don't go to the outdoor section, garden section at Walmart where they have the big cubic bags. Go to the indoor garden section right before you walk out the doors and look on the shelves. There are these like little $9.99 bags of ProMix. And I know they're kind of like the Walmart brand of soil, but man, ProMix is consistent. It's super high quality and it won't burn your plants. It has just enough food and not too much.
And I'm okay with that, like going some like that direction just for that start, because we've talked about it before where people run into issues where they're trying to seed directly into really active bed or active soil that they've pulled out of a bed. And when you have robust diversity going on, these things are going to eat those seedlings potentially, you know, and it's not even necessarily the isopods. Like if the seed gets too moist and like one side of it starts to rot a little bit, or there's like a casing on it, you know what I mean? That starts to rot. Other things will start to eat it too, that can stop it from germinating. So even the good guys might potentially be bad. So I'm all about starting it with like a sure shot just to get it out of the small phase of seedling.
That's right. I can't start stuff in my compost. It eats the seed, it eats the inside of the seed, whatever it is. I don't know, but it eats it every time. So I have to get something different.
It's the guys that you want working for you, but they work in conjunction with the root system. You know what I mean? So when I'm popping only a few, like if you were to throw a bunch of seeds down and do it that way, the strong would prevail. You know what I mean? Like you would succeed. But when we're talking about the small home grower popping a seed that could potentially be $10 or $20, it's like, I'm not taking that risk.
Oh man. Yeah. $10 or $20 if they didn't get swindled and buy a $500 pack, right? There's some crazy prices out there. Yeah, you don't want to lose that to a roly-poly.
Exactly.
To a gray. Hey, Benson Gray. There are protein-hungry isopods that don't eat your plants.
Freaking isopod. There he ate all my seeds.
Yeah. I get that question almost every show. People will come and ask me, like, hey, man, are these going to eat? I'm like, no, the basic grays will. Is CO2 necessary for tent grows? I would throw my own 2 cents into this. It is the cherry on top. We've talked about it before. Be interesting to see what Jordan has, and then Kevin or Mark, if you want to throw it in there.
I agree. That's absolutely right. If you have everything else dialed in and you really want to get advanced, CO2 is one of the fun things you can look at.
Yeah, I have CO2 hookup into my gasoline alley, but I didn't run it this year. I don't think I ran it last year either, but here's why, and you nailed it, Jordan. I've had ice in my drip trays and then my pots on it and my plants up here. And by the light, it's maybe 80 degrees, but down here, clearly it's freezing. And that happens within 4 feet. Like, yeah, I've seen my plants right now are going through what you just described, cold roots, cold water, slow uptake. The leaves are starting to kind of bring in and shrivel back down. You know, they're not big and flowy. I mean, it is what it is during this time. We're going into January in Oklahoma, and we're already into freezing degrees outside. So it's like for two months, I mean, it's like just keep them alive as best I can. And then early March, I can get them outside and actually get good sun on them, and they come back. And then we have them big. I'm going to go for massive plants again this year. That's what's going on. Those plants are hurting right now.
Well, that's an interesting point, too. I'll say if you're going to raise CO2, like understanding how the different environmental factors play into photosynthesis, right? And how you have to raise everything along with it. Like just boosting your CO2 if you look at the plant like a pump, and photosynthesis is the process that runs the pump. The plant is pumping moisture from the ground up into the air. The plant is taking in CO2, putting out oxygen. It's a pump. And certain things make that pump go faster. Heat makes that pump go faster. Light saturation makes that pump go faster. Added nutrition, makes the pump grow bigger and run faster. And CO2 is, if you get all those other things right, eventually, you know, why don't we just keep raising the heat to make it grow faster? Keep raising the light saturation to make it grow faster. Well, you hit ambient CO2. And so if you're going to raise that ambient CO2, you got to make sure that everything else is going to be able to keep up with it, because otherwise it's just going to be a waste or may even cause problems as one of these factors isn't raised along with the others. If that makes sense.
And the only thing I wanted to add was that if you're here's one of the beauties of growing in beds is that they produce CO2. If you've got mulch and you've got cover crop and you've got all that bioactivity, you'd be amazed at how much CO2 it actually puts off. It puts off ample what you would be supplementing pretty much. So it's pretty interesting.
I mean, depending on how big your tent grow is and stuff too. In the old days, we'd smoke hemp blunts and talk about our future and be breathing in the tent constantly and over-exaggerating and just having fun with the stuff and having mushrooms, supposedly, that were giving off CO2, the little mushroom bags. I think all of that stuff is kind of not necessary until you're just looking at your plants with just perfect praying leaves and everything and then kind of wondering, well, what else can I tinker with? We've always joked, well, go outside now. It's time to go hang out with the family again. You're doing well, you know, you have more free time. So it's always fun to grow the plants and stuff, but I think there's also something too, like just finding other hobbies as well. People that get pigeonholed into only doing cannabis, I've noticed sometimes that might also be why they just are just obsessed with it. And I'm obsessed with certain things in life too. Like behind the scenes, I study poker on a daily, right? But I also find time to do other stuff, and I would like to see more of that, where more of the friends are about cannabis, yes, but also other things in life. All right, I wanted to throw this over here to Brandon Clark. When using a sip system, how long do you wait to fill with water after planting in?
Now you're speaking my language. I literally go over these exact amounts in the guide. Again, growcast.com, get it for free. But to answer Brandon's question, here's exactly how I do it. You get your soil. I fill the earth box and then top water. It's not a huge volume of soil. It waters through pretty well. And then when you bottom saturate it, it's going to get even. So in an earth box, I take 1 gallon of water exactly. I'll add my liquid microbes. I might add some humic acids, anything that I want to go into the soil. And I water that over the entire soil surface and transplant in. You can then fill the reservoir 48 hours later if you want. I wait about 3 days. But if you're transplanting from like a solo cup, you'll be surprised. The roots will almost already be down to the grate at the bottom. So you water with 1 gallon of water, and then 48 to 72 hours later, fill that reservoir. Now here's the pro tip. Let your earth box dry out in between refilling it every time. That's going to help you a lot. Also keep something down in there to keep things clean and moving and grooving. My top two recommendations are either labs. Labs are great. They're super easy. You can make them yourself. You can get them from Man OK Calyx. Or I like to put a little Photo Plus down there. Photo Plus, King Crab, these biological bacteria products that keep things clean and won't gunk up your stuff. So those would be the two recommendations. And then, yeah, 1 gallon over the surface of the soil and then wait 3 days. In a city picker, you can do like 3 liters. So like 0.75 gallons, essentially. You can do 3 liters and do the same thing 2 days later.
And you're not, just to clarify, you're not letting the soil dry out. You're just letting the resi, you're waiting until you can see the bottom of the resi, right?
Exactly.
Gotcha. Okay.
And you can toy, if you want to do some crop steering, mid-flower dry back, you can toy with, okay, I see that the reservoir is going to dry and I'm going to let it go a little further because there is some soil in there, but you nailed it. Generally, I want you to wait until it's empty and then fill it again, which leaves the soil quite moist, evenly moist.
Jordan, one of your members, shout out to at Kid Mac. He does this system in 5 gallon buckets, and he has a stick that floats and goes down. And I don't do it, but he does it, and he loves it. Is that another system you guys discussed?
Yeah, there was a guy who was selling 5 gallon bucket converters that convert a 5 gallon Home Depot bucket into a sip, which I think is a brilliant product. And if what you can do is you can insert, you can install what I think is called a float valve and like a float meter, and it can kick on a pump. If you wanted to rig up a sip right, you could have it detect when it's empty and then refill the exact amount that it needs to be refilled. And then you don't ever have to touch that thing. It's literally autopilot. the reason I like sips and to not have something like that with a pump is there's no fail points. I love blue mats in a big soil bed. I love, all sorts of different watering systems, but there's a fail point with all of those. In a sip system, it's just physics. There is no fail point. So that's why I like sips.
It seems like the biggest fail point is the setup, is like, make, you know, like it doesn't wick, right? I feel like I've read, and I'm not an expert on SIP, but like, is there instances where you fail at right off the clip because the soil's not moist enough, or the you don't
generally you probably didn't pack down your corners, is what I would say. When I see people saying my soil isn't wicking, I ask, did you pack down those corners tight? You remember I said in the reservoir, the four corners are cut out and you press those down. And if you don't, it doesn't wick properly. But no, man, it works quite well. I would even say the city pickers, because they're smaller, are even like easier. In the earth box, if you don't pack down the corners, you're going to run into problems like you just described, for sure. But that's really the only time I see that.
Which I love, because I ran blue mats and I ran blue tape and I did all that fun stuff. And like you said, there's fail points. You come home, it's flooded out, and it's nothing you did wrong. It's just the tape got gunked up and it's flooding out the back end of it. And there's no...
I've never flooded my blue mats, but I've seen that in my Discord before.
Oh yeah, my God, we had blue mats on a commercial scale, and we were flooding rooms.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. Blue mats, I guess, is for another day, but on the commercial side of things, you got to really have your shit dialed in, and I think it begins, obviously, if the tent grows, the basement grows, you know, you scale up and stuff, but you want to be successful with the grows before you start tinkering with things, and I think that's another thing, too. If you really want to talk about beginner tips is, I've heard a lot of people, especially when you ask them, well, how long have you been growing? They're like, oh, 90 days, you know, or this is my second flip. Like, your focus should just be on that grow, not on things in the future and all of that kind of stuff. So stay in the present, I would say, is something that I wish I would have kept on. I had grand vision, especially moving to Denver, Colorado, that I was going to have, you know, millions of dollars and blah, blah, blah. And the reality is that especially if you're getting into it now, 2025, you're growing this plant because you love it. Everybody can, almost everybody has some kind of plug. So the reality of trying to flip this and make money, that's pretty hard to do, even in Denver, Colorado, and I would imagine in most states at this point. So the reality is you're growing this for medicine, for yourself, and hopefully for loved ones. And that gives you a sense of purpose, giving back to what Kevin was kind of getting at as well, where you have something, you're responsible of something. And you want to take care of it because you know that other people are relying on you for their medicine. And when you're growing in a living soil with microbes, in my opinion, that really is medicine. I personally use it constantly, probably too much, to be honest. But without it, I just feel like my stress levels get too high. I have four children is too much, and then I want to trade them off. So I would imagine having an extra one like Kevin, it just is a whole nother fucking like, oh, my God. So
yeah, dude, it's something about
it. Yeah, I you know, at this point in life, it's something that we've been doing for so long that I don't even really see it as a negative, because it allows you to manage businesses, being a married man and handling your children. So just know that everybody is going through stuff behind the scenes, and it's pretty cool to see that, you know, we're all willing to talk about that. All right, last question here. And I think this should be something for, again, in hindsight and those kind of things, I'm going to give it to Jordan first, but silent truth. He's going through the thick of it. And what I think a lot of us do, especially from our guest last week with Mackie, when he was talking about don't show your girl. Like, we've always had friends that were maybe a little bit crude, but it was like, man, you wouldn't show your girl to your friends. Why are you showing, like, this is an intimate thing that you need to keep to your fucking self if you are growing where it's illegal? And then the flip side of that is, if it is legal and you want to show it off, this is the hindsight with this, is now you're going to have all kinds of problems. Because a lot of times people secretly have spider mites, russet mites, and they're not telling you that. They're probably trying to pick your brain secretly. So again, if you're doing this as a grow where somebody is counting on you, I would keep it to myself. Let the family know about it, and that is it. Other than that, throw it over to Jordan. I really do think, man, when you grow cannabis, keep that shit to yourself. At least when you're first starting out.
Yeah, I mean, we tend to forget. We used to call it, back before so many of the rest of the country legalized, we would call it the California bubble. When I was living in Humboldt, and like, it was so open and it was just what you did. But you forget that you drive a couple hours east and you're out of the California bubble. And it's absolutely true. There's a lot of places. I guess this kind of leads to one thing I'd like to say, and then we'll talk about problems in Instagram, which is, there's a couple really important things that need to be done as far as advancing the cannabis industry, cannabis patients, and cannabis culture. here are the list of the most important things in my estimation. Number one, the people who are still in jail right now for just a plant. If you're in jail and the only thing you did was have this plant, cultivate this plant, smoke this plant, whatever, that is probably the number one atrocity. No one can defend that. Medical access to cannabis is maybe the most agreed upon subject in the United States, where we can't agree on anything. And something like 80% of Americans agree with some form of medical cannabis. You can't agree, get 80% of Americans agree on shit. And still there are people in jail. Now, the problem is I ain't a lawyer. That's my big problem. I'd love to help those people. I'm not a lawyer. Number two, the number two biggest thing is probably the laws and legislations that put those people there, and the laws and legislations that are currently choking out our patient market. I think that's probably the second most important thing, is we have to stop those people from going to jail, and we have to protect our patients moving forward. The problem is I'm not a politician. I don't know how to lobby. I'm not a lobbyist. I'm not any of those things. I think the third most important thing we could do is grow the plant and teach others to grow the plant. I literally think it's bullet point number three. I think this list is probably 400 items long. And I think the third best thing that we could be doing, that anyone watching this could be doing, is to grow it and to get other people growing it, because it destigmatizes it. It kicks the legislators and the anti-home grow corporations right where it hurts. It devalues cannabis, which is, should be devalued. There needs to be more of it. It needs to be more accessible to patients. It helps the patients. And what I think is so important is that the more people we get growing now, the harder it's going to be for them to rip away these rights when one day they try to. If we don't get enough people growing, who's going to stand up and fight when they come around and say, hey, we're going to revoke this home grow light, right, in the name of safety? You don't know what could be on your flower. It's for the children. We're going to take away your home grow rights. We need to get as many people growing now, so when that happens, they say, fuck that. Everybody grows. You're not ripping this away from me. So that's what I think are the most important things, and that's why we need to grow. Now, once you go legal, you start posting on Instagram and all that stuff, but you don't post your infested plants. You always post what looks good, right? So I think it's important also to destigmatize all of it and just be more open about that and be honest with what you're dealing with. You know what I mean?
Yes, yeah. Guys like us who have families and jobs and businesses, and we use cannabis, and look, we're successful. You know, you remember that woman that went to the Olympics last Olympics maybe, and she was a track and field girl, and she
Sha'Carri Richardson.
Yes, you know what that proves is that an Olympian can use cannabis. That's all that proved. They took her away from that race and all that, but God, that was ridiculous. She's using cannabis, and she made it to the Olympics, and now you do that to her. That doesn't show anything about cannabis. It just shows you're mean spirited towards a person to do what you did to that poor girl. It has nothing to do with what cannabis does. It obviously helped her be successful, like it does every one of us right here.
That's right. Yeah. How about Michael Phelps? That's one that like nobody talks about. Is like, yeah, like the best, the person with the best lung function on planet Earth. Like no one, we don't bring that up. Like when people are anti-cannabis or anything, fucking Michael Phelps. We forgot about that guy. Huge stoner. It's hilarious.
Yeah, that guy has bong clearing lungs, you know, like 6 foot.
No doubt, dude. Just keeps going.
Man.
Good stuff.
Yeah, this was great, man. I think, especially since this is the first show of the new year, understanding homegrown, like Jordan was getting at, this is really the last hurrah, as your kind of silent vote, again, keep it silent, to fuck you to the man, is where if you could heal yourself, and there's a lot of ways. I'm even going to be talking about some more of that stuff for Matt Powers' talk. I was working on it right before earlier today. I think there's something very special to what Kevin was saying, and Mark's talked about it before, and I want to, you know, talk about this kind of stuff too. Yes, we're all striving to provide and all this kind of stuff, but at the end of the day, most of us are part of that pillar of your home. And so you need to make sure that you're taking care of yourself so that you have enough energy and drive to take care of everybody else. And I know that is straining. And every family man has gone through it, where they're waking up in the morning just, how the fuck am I going to be able to get through all of this? So there's a lot of ways. I'm going to break a lot of that down, because I think there is some special to that, because there's probably 3 or 4 years, especially when I was in Oklahoma, Kevin, where I felt like I was so drained. I was wondering why do I feel this fucking lazy? I've never felt this lazy in my life. Why do I want to lay down on the couch? Why do I, you know, that was my personal, you know, everybody has their own view of it. but it was from not being able to digest things correctly. And there's a whole aspect to this. So I just wanted to highlight that going into 2025, if you can kind of stay focused on that and not lose sight of, I'm going to take care of myself a little bit more this year, I think it's going to go further to also take care of everybody else in your family, and it'll trickle down to everybody, friends, and all that kind of stuff. But not enough men are really sitting there focused on what they're going to do, and just wanted to put that out there.
No, that's exactly it, fellas. That's what I'm talking about right there. Men in a cannabis culture on Instagram, we're not showing our wives' asses and stuff like that. We're actually showing our children. I refer to mine lovingly as my F1s all the time. But that's what changes the culture. You know, you're talking about overgrowth, Jordan. I totally agree with you. Normalize it, and then look at the normal people who are just normally growing a normal plant. It's just freaking us. We are your neighbor. We're your friend. You know, I'm a business owner, a community. I work with children. I love it, and they love me. It's a fan club I have in this community. You know, 12 kids that are little, like my kids, like y'all's kids, if you just kind of make them giggle and laugh, and I got a gym of trampolines and mats and ropes and rings and all that stuff, dude, I'm a hero to them. If I simply look at them and say, God, you're doing a great job, buddy. Keep going, man. They're like, he's the best. But yeah, and I use cannabis too, right? Yeah, it's fantastic what it does for your life. And we all show it by living our lives and showing my freaking, you know, showing that I live with my family. I support my family. I don't let trash come in my family. I want to be an example to the community, because there's plenty of other examples out there that, you know, it's just too much thuggy. It's not family. It's not taking care of the next generation. It's not learning from your mistakes and moving forward with wisdom. It's not the example I want. So we need to set it.
Hell yeah. Couldn't agree more with that. And that's one of my big New Year's resolutions, is to try to take better care of my mental health and myself, eating better, you know, drinking less. I'm definitely doing Sober January. Shout out to anybody else that's on that. And, you know, I saw, like, that's what one of the good news that you read on, you know, when you're searching the web, is like 30% of, you know, the population or people that were polled are going to cut drinking out of their lives, at least for January. I think that there's nothing at all bad about that trend. I think that that is amazing news. And I'm personally, I'm stoked on it, because I'm going to hopefully get some mental clarity and not feel so out of control. By adding one more thing to the mix, I think that clouds a lot of things. It messes up sleep cycle, which messes up everything in life. So I'm super excited about that. I'm super excited about mental health and focusing on mine this year. So appreciate having you guys in that mix. I'm going to be leaning on you guys a lot, and we've already been talking about it. So it's great. To sign off the show, Jordan, I mean, we talked a lot with you. GrowCast, how do we find you? Where do we find you? Tell us all about that.
Thank you, man. It's real simple now. We have a brand new website. I'm super proud of it. It's growcast.com. Go and check it out. For everyone who's already growing, make sure you check out membership. We have a couple really cool things going on. You can find it all there. If you see, there's a bunch of members in the chat right now. My family, shout out to all of you members. Come and check it out. We'd love to have you. And make sure you're in by February 15th, because we're doing the Grand Pheno Hunt Round 2. So the Grand Pheno Hunt is really simple. All of our Patreon members hunt through a bunch of genetics. We choose 10 finalists, 3 ultimate finalists, and then 1 grand prize winner who wins $1,000. We get that cut to Rizo Rich, and then he works that genetic line down the future. So it's the best way to make growing awesome and fun and keep up with everything. We're going to get a bunch of guests from the show that you know and love as part of the hunt. Calix, I'd love to have you in there. I know Kid Mac is going to be in there. You're all welcome to join us. And again, it starts 2:15. Make sure you're in GrowCast membership by 2:15. It's growcast.com. You can also find the podcast up there. It's free. Tune in and learn. And one last thing, what I'd really like to challenge you guys to do is, if there are any smokers in your life who smoke every day, they should be growing, send them to growcast.com. There's a free guide to learn how to grow. So that's what I would really like to ask of your audience, to continue to promote cultivation and to help us on our mission of overgrow. Convert 1 million smokers into growers. That's our mission. Growcast.com. Check it out.
Love that mission. definitely a friend of a friendly mission to this show, and hopefully we can have you back on for round two, where we can hit some more of these awesome grow tips that you got. Because
anytime,
something tells me that there's a lot more in the bag.
I got a couple big ones that I kept up my sleeve. So if you ever want to do another one, we can talk about more hacks. We can talk about deficiencies. I love talking deficiencies. Again, Mary Beth taught me everything I know about that. Shout out to her. Shout out to the whole GrowCast team, Riser Rich and Wolfman and all the mods and everybody tuned in right now. I just very grateful to continue to do this. So
hell yeah. Brian, what do you got going on, man?
Man, again, I've been very blessed. I do feel like when you're on a certain thing, things are going great. So I have Rubber Ducky Isopods and Shop Terrarium Tribe. Continue to support me with the way that you guys have, and continue to be able to do this on Friday nights. Get people like Jordan on the show. I think there's a lot more to, I think I even said at the beginning, on Instagram when I posted at the beginning, that self-education is self-preservation. And I've seen a lot of my friends throughout the cannabis community, especially over the years, they start to build something up and then they want to get rid of that person because another person supposedly can come in and do it cheaper. But if you continue to educate yourself, you might not necessarily always have to bounce around like that. So I just wanted to, end on, no one can ever steal what you put in your brain. And so if you continue behind the scenes to be able to do that when no one's looking, and I meant that when I made that post, it's you're learning that's brand new. But I promise you, when that summertime comes and you feel so much better about that, it just feels brighter. And there's something to that, man, when you're kind of going through stuff. So shout out to everybody that is now growing for 2025. Shout out to people that want to get better and healthier for 2025. I think a lot of us in the early days thought that our bodies would last forever, I guess, and that alcohol and eating candy all night long and all the bullshit that we've probably done over the years wouldn't catch up to us. And it has caught up to me tremendously, and I'm happy to share with how you kind of fix that kind of stuff. Kevin, I think you're next, bro.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Jordan, for being on the show. Very good friend, excellent human being. I love that you are under the Atlantic Ocean, someplace in a mysterious underground power cave, man. Love it. So yeah, go check out growcast.com. Tons of stuff over there. Often I go to Kid Mac's house on Wednesday nights and watch his Patreon show. And I've been on his Discords and all the fun stuff. It's a great time. They're hilarious over there and tons of information. However, you can also go to okcalicshop.com. Got a bunch of seeds, genetics, the IMO3, Nobokashi. It's all out, but I got a new batch cooking right now. Okcalicshop.com, and then we will have the Autumn Immersive in October this year. It's going to be fantastic. We're going to go through all the inputs, go out to the woods, and just have a wonderful time. Jordan, I'm going to need you to speak a little section, though, this year. I took up the whole thing, dude. I hogged the time. After we were done, I was like,
dude,
man,
you
did
awesome.
I didn't let anybody do anything. It was all me, but I told you I was going to do that. But yeah,
I kind of liked that, man. I would love to add a little bit of knowledge, but I got to say it was nice to let a real teacher teach. I don't want to gush more, but honestly, it's the best class. And those tickets are up. Growcast.com, you can find there. But if you're returning, wait for day two. You'll get an email. You get an email in the next week.
Yeah, that sounds good. Get a little info out there.
Mark?
Yeah. So just wanted to do a quick little housekeeping. Next week, we've got Matthew Gates coming back on. Last time he was on, we were talking about powdery mildew and just really kind of hammering that conversation down to something understandable. So if you didn't catch that one, definitely go back and listen. He helps us understand ways to avoid that a lot better. This time he's coming on to talk about identifying genetically resistant plants. If you're a breeder, from small to large, kind of how to establish SOPs on finding actual genetically resistant plants, the ones that are going to be resistant to pests, pathogens, stuff like that. So that's going to be really interesting. It's going to be kind of like just one of these lob up for him to spike down, because this is stuff that he's developing. This is in-house stuff that is really fresh information and stuff that anybody who's trying to save seeds and breed can really use this knowledge. So definitely catch that next Friday. And then the Friday after that, We've got the folks from Dragonfly Earth Medicine coming on, and they're going to be joining us for a regenerative agriculture Q&A. Going to basically hopefully get like their big heavy hitting information on how to close your loops, how to live off of your land more. They're true permaculture, regenerative agriculture stewards, and really excited to get to talk to those two. So definitely tune in the next 2 weeks. You can catch us at mibeneficials.com. Don't forget to take care of yourselves, guys. This is the year of self-preservation and living a better quality of life. And hopefully this show can help you guys get that information to improve your gardens. Don't forget to hit the like and subscribe button. Thank you all for joining us. Have a great night. See you next week.
Bye, everyone. Thank you.